You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we're opening up the mailbag in the middle of the week because we recapped last night's game against, or 2 days ago, depending on when you're listening to this, against the Hornets. A big win for the Heat, but a couple of days off here before Friday night's game against Toronto, so we figured, hey, let's talk some mailbag stuff, because I don't know how many more of these we're going to have this regular season. So, It's not that many more regular season games left. All right, let's just open it up then. This first question comes from Chris Leach. Does James Johnson solve the Deion Waiters problem in the starting lineup? He allows Josh Richardson to be the third ball handler and gets into the paint with ease. This does limit the bench, but you could stagger him and Dragic to avoid not having a primary ball handler. We talked about this a bit in the recap of the Hornets game, right? This exact thing about staggering those lineups and how it worked in the Hornets game. But as far as solving the Deion Waiters problem, what do you think, David?
It's interesting because I think I don't know that it necessarily solves it. It adds a piece to the power forward position that's often been the most glaring hole in Miami's lineup. He is obviously a secondary ball handler. He does create opportunities for guys along the perimeter. I think yesterday we saw that both Dragic and Josh Richardson, who were starting alongside in the backcourt, benefited from having a guy like James Johnson. So clearly there is a benefit there. I don't know that necessarily is enough to replace what Deion brings. As Chris points out, a weaker bench is something that's difficult to handle. I mean, I think ultimately you'd prefer having either Deion and James Johnson, both Deion and James Johnson in the lineup. But I guess you can't always get what you want. I don't know. It's tough to answer that question because it does provide a boost. But at the same time, if you're weakening your bench, it wasn't an issue against Charlotte, but Charlotte's not a particularly deep team. With the exception of Jeremy Lamb and Frank Kaminsky, I can't think of any player that they bring off the bench that provides much of value there. So, against teams in the playoffs, I'm not sure, or the games that we're going to be facing over the next four nights or next four games, they're a little deeper, a little better. I'm not sure that there would be a benefit or a problem, to be honest with you.
The flip side of that, too, is that you bring – if you start James Johnson, then Luke Babbitt's coming off the bench. And I think Luke Babbitt really benefits from playing along with the starters because they're able to create open looks for him. If he's on the bench, it's not like Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson, or Josh Richardson's a starter right now, but when Waiters comes back, if Richardson goes back to the bench. But guys like that can get Babbitt open looks, but they're not going to be as open as a look that Waiters and Dragic gets them. And Babbitt's floor spacing, he's just known as a knockdown three-point shooter. As good as James Johnson has been from that, Babbitt does space the floor a bit more than James Johnson. I mean, he likes to hover around the perimeter. James Johnson likes to get a little bit closer to the rim and kind of throw elbows and get physical. Babbitt's a guy that wants to stand as far away from the basket as possible, draw as many defenders as possible to him, and open up the lane. So that helps that. So there's a lot of different things that go into the geometry of this. But I did want to just kind of bring in the stats here. If we're going to talk about just replacing Deion Waiters in that starting unit, right? Deion Waiters and Dragic are, first of all, two of the top six drivers in the game. They average more drives per game than just about any other players in the NBA. They're top six. I mean, that's elite company. Just as far as getting to the rim. Their field goal percentages are good. Waiters has a 49% field goal percentage at the rim. Dragic is at 56%, which is a really efficient rate. And Waiters' assist percentage is at 13%. Dragic's is at 10%. So that's the amount of assists that they create on drives. So I'm looking at James Johnson and Josh Richardson's stats of the same advanced stats. James Johnson has 6.4 drives per game. Josh Richardson has 3.9. So combined, they average about what Dragic, as many drives per game as Dragic does, combined. Their field goal percentage is right in line, 53% each. That's a really nice number, even though it's coming on a fewer amount of drives. And their assist percentages are, for James Johnson, 8.7%, and for Richardson, 8.5%. So not as high as Dragic and Waiters, and that goes with the eye test, right? Like, they're not as good as driving kicks players as those two guys. few players in the league are, but it's within 2% of Dragic. So basically, the combination of James Johnson and Josh Richardson on the floor gives you another Dragic in one way or the other, right? You're replacing two primary ball handlers, Dragic and Waiters, with three ball handlers now between James Johnson, Richardson, and Dragic in that starting lineup. But like you were talking about before, what you're using three to replace two, and that takes away from your bench. That takes away from maybe the spacing that Luke Babbitt gives you. So there's a flip side to everything.
Yeah, I think, you know, I still go back to what we talked about when we were recapping the Hornets game. I think ultimately the James Johnson starting lineup is probably the best option for Miami, not just over the next few games, but also once the playoffs begin, if Miami does eventually make the postseason. But then from that point, it'll be up to Spoelstra to determine how to stagger a lineup so that there is either one or a primary ball handler in either Dragic or James Johnson. You bring in Tyler Johnson, maybe, like we saw last night or when we saw against Charlotte. You know, Goran got subbed out early despite a hot start. They brought Tyler in there. He was able to engage teams with the full court press. You know, he's a little bit more engaged defensively than Goran Dragic is. So I think it works in that sense. And obviously you'd prefer having a guy like Deion available as well so that you can mix and match things as conveniently as possible. So
you think when Waiters comes back, they'll still have James Johnson in the starting unit?
I think so. I think you want to be able to set a tone early on, and you can still do enough with your depth. At that point, Josh will have gotten some more experience. His confidence will be a little higher. Mm-hmm. You can go to Tyler Johnson as well, give Dragic or Waiters a spell if they need it. You know, there's so many different options there. You can bring in Tyler, who would play more, you know, ostensibly the shooting guard spot with Waiters as the primary ball handler. Then bring in, you know, take out, you know, James Johnson and bring in Babbitt if you want a little more floor spacing. Then bring back James Johnson and Goran, and all of a sudden you have this really potent secondary unit that can really utilize Willie Reed more effectively, I think, as a rim roller. So there's a lot of different options there. I think that's ultimately what you'll see in the playoffs.
And the domino effect of maybe moving Josh Richardson back to the bench and Babbitt back to the bench. Maybe Richardson, he's been playing well in the last four games. That Knicks game was rough where he went 0-4, but besides that, he's been in double digits. He's been playing well. If you move him back to the bench, maybe he's able to carve up, you know, opposing backups a little bit more than he's able to play against their starters. Maybe that helps. So Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson backcourt in that bench unit would work nicely. And if you have Babbitt on the bench, now maybe that helps Willie Reed, you know, because Willie Reed is somebody that needs quite a bit of space because he's a guy that likes to get tip-ins and putbacks and stuff like that. He's not a guy that's going to stretch the floor necessarily. So maybe Babbitt helps open up things for him a little bit more. I don't know. There's obviously going to be domino effects if you start switching up the rotations now, but it's an interesting thing to think about. All right.
I think with Miami, and given the number of lineup changes they've had to make because of injuries and things of that sort, I think this team is probably better equipped than most to make that kind of a huge change. Look at it. I mean, it didn't impact them at all against Charlotte. I mean, the reality is a guy like James Johnson hadn't started all season long. He's inserted there and he winds up with 26 points. And it seemed like a really seamless transition, not just for him, but for everybody else that he shared the floor with. And again, you know, you take the quality of opponent into consideration. That's probably not liable to work as well against a Cleveland or Boston or whoever Miami matches up with in the playoffs. But it's still something I think would work in Miami's benefit.
Yeah, I mean, and in the playoffs, when rotations will shrink, you got if your proposed starting unit is Dragic, Waiters, Magruder, James Johnson, Whiteside, and then you got Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, Willie Reed, and Babbitt coming off the bench. Am I forgetting anybody?
Possibly.
Oh, Wayne Ellington.
Well, but yeah, Wellington, yeah.
Maybe O'Kara White. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, they can go nine.
I mean, there's the other ideas. Like, what if you put James Johnson at small forward, and then you had Dragic, Waiters, James Johnson, Babbitt, Whiteside. And then what you do is, because look, Magruder, as great as and as fun as he's been, and as much as Spoelstra likes him, can he play in the playoffs? We saw Nick Batum and guys, a lot of guys recently, really take advantage of the height difference.
Yeah.
Magruder is a shooting guard and a guy that should be defending shooting guards, and he's playing small forward.
That's a really good point, because I'm trying to think who they match up against. You know, if they met Cleveland, James Johnson seems a lock to start at small forward, right? In that case, and then you can have Babbitt onto Kevin Love, and I think it would still work. And Whiteside would have his hands full trying to keep Tristan Thompson off the glass.
And then all of a sudden, your starting unit of Dragic, Waiters, James Johnson, Babbitt, Whiteside, and then you can have your next your bench, your next three or four guys would be Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, Willie Reed, and then Ellington. And that's a strong top nine. You know what I mean? That's arguably your best nine players. Nothing against Ryan Magruder, but.
Yeah, that's tough, right? Because he's been so good, but you're asking him to do a lot in guarding LeBron James, and I think, you know, LeBron is just
DeRozan,
too good.
DeRozan like carved him up the last time they played.
Paul George,
and this has been a couple situations now where he would start on these guys, and then Spoelstra would go to Josh Richardson later in the game to defend those guys. There's a few situations where that's happened.
Now, we've seen James Johnson at center. I don't think we've seen him as a small forward at any point this season. Given that he's lost weight, he's played the position in the past, do you think he's capable of it, or would it only be in a situation like against a Cleveland where they have a guy?
You could argue like that Babbitt might be the small forward in that rotation, right? I think maybe it depends on the matchups, who you go. Like you against Cleveland, you'd have James Johnson guard LeBron and Babbitt would guard Love. But against, you know,
Boston.
Yeah, against Boston, maybe James Johnson is playing power forward and Babbitt is playing small forward.
I don't think he can keep Jay Crowder off the glass.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe against Jay Crowder. Maybe it just depends on the lineup, but yeah. I mean, those are basically interchangeable forwards, right? Johnson and Babbitt, depending on the matchup.
Yeah.
But I think he can play small forward. I mean, he lost weight this year. He didn't gain weight, even though he's been playing center for us, right?
I know. And he does seem like he has that quickness to contend. I mean, look, that would be... And again, and you don't want to focus on it. I pointed this out against in the Hornets recap, but James Johnson has an opportunity to go up against LeBron James. If he can even come close to holding his own, how much of a benefit is that for a guy entering in free agency?
Right. I mean, to be able to play and prove and to play the multiple positions like that would be huge. But also, if you start James Johnson at small forward, this could be like what the Warriors did with Jaymon Green, because he was nominally a small forward for a while Harrison Barnes was power forward, right?
Right.
But he guarded power forwards, he guarded centers. I mean, there is an opportunity here to go small, put James Johnson at center, you keep Babbitt in there, and you bring Josh Richardson or Wayne Ellington off the bench as your third guard. All of a sudden, you're playing like a really small death lineup type thing, too. Which is, I don't think, a lineup that we've really seen at all this season. It would have a lot of spacing and could be deadly if Dragic and Waiters were both healthy. But the playoffs are
speaking
coming
of healthy. Oh, go ahead.
Well, two good segues. We both were like, well, let's see which one works here. But speaking of the playoffs, they're coming up. Just a few games left. Obviously, you're tuning into Locked On Heat, and we appreciate that. But make sure that when the playoffs roll around, that you're checking out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, because the Heat are going to be playing somebody in the playoffs, hopefully. And if you want like advanced scouting reports and just insider information like you get about the Heat from David and I about other teams that the Heat are playing, check out the Locked On Podcast Network. There's a Locked On Cavaliers. There's a Locked On Celtics. There's a Locked On Raptors. I mean, there's a bunch of Locked On. There's a Locked On podcast for every NBA and NFL team. Check out the network, see what else they got, and give it a listen. All right. Speaking of healthy, like you were saying,
there you go.
Our next question.
Segway number two.
Josh McRoberts just got in some contact practice. If he can return, where do you see him sliding in, if at all, in this rotation? What do you think, David?
Yeah, I just can't see a scenario where Spoelstra thinks it's okay to overturn the apple cart, as they say, and mess things up. We just talked about Rodney Magruder, who's been a starter for a big chunk of the season, possibly being, you know, forced out of the lineup because he just doesn't match up well against longer players. And all of a sudden you've got a guy who's missed almost all the season, who does provide some length and does have some floor spacing ability, not just as a shooter, but because he moves the ball around well and you know, people tend to – he creates space that way. But I just can't see – look, I mean, maybe they've seen enough for the next week or so of practice where they think he's a contributor, but it's tough for me to envision that.
I don't know.
Didn't they do this last season as well against Toronto, I want to say, where he was hurt, and then they tried forcing him in there when injuries to Whiteside kind of necessitated McRoberts' insertion into the lineup? Like, that was when Spoelstra was looking desperate, and he was like, let's go with anybody here. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember McRoberts?
He played well, though, in the playoffs.
Well,
he had a nice last couple of games of the playoffs. He was shooting efficiently. I think that's what happened. Look, Willie Reed, we talked about him before. He's not been playing really great lately. I don't know what it is, but he hasn't been. If he's not playing great in the playoffs, and Josh McRoberts is healthy and he's fresh, do you make him the backup center for small ball lineups? I mean, he's played, according to Basketball Reference, he's only played 381 minutes this year, but 25% of those minutes have come at center. He's playing 1/4 of the time at center, the rest of the time at power forward. He's a good 6'10". He's a big guy. He's as big as Willie Reed is. There might be an option there where you are playing Whiteside for 35 to 38 minutes a game, right? Because minutes tick up in the playoffs. And instead of just bringing in a poor man's Whiteside and Willie Reed, maybe you just switch it up completely, bring in McRoberts as your backup center. Maybe it depends on the matchup. But if I'm with you that McRoberts probably isn't seeing the floor for the rest of the season. And I think Miami's real concern with McRoberts is, can we trade this guy? Because we need to clear his cap space. That's probably the number one priority when it comes to McRoberts, as tough as it is to say that. But if there's a situation in the playoffs where Willie Reed's not playing well, we've seen Spoelstra go deep into his bench and pull out guys that haven't really done a whole lot during the season. We've seen that before, and we could see it again with McRoberts.
It's an interesting option there. And again, you know, another tool in the toolbox for Spoelstra to figure out and to tinker with and to change things up. And again, I'm trying to envision when they go up against either Cleveland or Boston, should they make the playoffs, whether or not
Boston
he works one of those situations.
If Boston's playing like
Olynyk?
Yeah, if they're playing Olynyk at center and they say, look, Willie Reed can't keep up with this guy. Whiteside needs to get a blow on the bench. Let's put McRoberts in there to run around with Olynyk. You know, they could also go with O'Kara White or James Johnson in that same sense at center, but
that's a good point.
You know, if James Johnson's playing small forward. I'm with you. I think McRoberts doesn't play. But if he were to play, that's where I see it maybe happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you want to see him out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do I. I think a lot of people are just so down on him because of the last three seasons and injuries and everything else. But I mean, I still love his skill set. I think if he, you know, health has always been the issue, and the lack of confidence that we're seeing now from Josh Richardson, and we've seen in the past with Josh McRoberts, and you know, if he was just close to the kind of outside shooter he was with the Bobcats, we'd be singing a different tune because he's really, really good in that regard.
Yeah. And you know, while we're here, just don't hate on McRoberts, Heat fans. I know it's easy to sports hate on him and stuff like that and just to kind of clown on him and on Twitter and stuff like that, but it's not like he decided to get injured. He wants to be out there more than you guys want to see him out there. Like, just let's lay easy on McRoberts. He's a good dude. Let's lay easy on him. All right, next question. I bet LeBron sits when he plays Miami this coming Monday. They play at the Cavs. They play Atlanta on Sunday in the middle of the day, and then travel to Miami for a second night of a back-to-back. LeBron, in the past, has sat on the second night of a back-to-back against Miami. What do you guys think? That question from Taylor Monk. So just to kind of recap the schedule here, Miami and the Cavaliers play on Monday. That's the second to the last game of the season for the Heat and for the Cavaliers. And Taylor's right. The Cavaliers play Atlanta on Friday, then they play them on Sunday. And then they play them on Sunday on the road, and then they get on the road again to play in Miami on Monday. He's right that LeBron has sat on second games to the back-to-backs. He's also played in second games on back-to-backs. Most recently against Boston, the same night that the Heat beat the Hornets. And the Cavaliers wiped the floor with the Celtics, 114-91. LeBron had 36 points in that game. Maybe he's flipping the switch now, and it doesn't matter so much. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I think we tend to want to pigeonhole what LeBron can and can't do. But if Heat fans remember anything of his tenure here, is that with the exception of a terrible playoff run in 2011, there's really nothing that can stop LeBron other than LeBron. And if he wants to play in the second night of a back-to-back, he'll play and he'll probably do really, really well. And you know, obviously, as we talked about the matchup with Magruder, you know, it's one that he could certainly dominate. So I'm hesitant to put too much weight in what we've seen in the past or what we've predicted as far as whether or not he'll play. I personally, I don't think he'll play. I think he'll sit it out. But
it's good that they beat the Celtics, right? Now maybe they have two games against a really struggling Atlanta team. Maybe they win those two games, and all of a sudden they've got the one seed with two games left in the season. The Celtics don't have it, and they can just rest their players the last two games.
Yeah, but that'd be who's their last game of the season again?
Oh, it's Toronto. They play Toronto, so that's not going to matter.
They'll probably rest. Yeah, they'll probably rest for that one.
So I mean, but the Cavaliers this season have struggled on with 0 days rest. Brian Windhorst wrote something for ESPN.com a couple days ago. They allow 112 points per 100 possessions, which is near last in the league with 0 days rest. They score fine enough, 108 points per 100 possessions, but it's the defense.
Yeah, it's never been a problem for them.
Right. And here's another. When the Cavs are on the road for a back-to-back, they allow 113 points per 100 possessions, get outscored by 11 points per 100 possessions. Now, obviously, this wasn't the case against the Celtics, but the Cavaliers have struggled. And look, the Celtics game is one game, and that was a very important game for Cleveland. If you're the Cavaliers and you look at your next... And, you know, you beat Orlando on Tuesday, and you've got five games left in the season. At Boston, versus Atlanta, at Miami, versus Toronto. If they had to pick one game to win, they're picking that Boston game. So maybe that's what, you know, they say, let's go all out for this Boston game. Maybe they slide in one of these games. Or, like we said, Miami gets the benefit of the doubt, or it gets the benefit of a Cleveland team that has locked up the one seed and just is able to rest their players for the last week of the season.
Yeah, I think for Cleveland, typically rest is more important than even getting the one seed. Even if they're still competing for the first seed in the standings, I think for them it's more important. They've already shown that they can beat opponents on the road or not. That doesn't really matter. If it's a series against Boston eventually, you know, and they're the second seed, I don't think that really matters. I don't think LeBron is worried about going to the TD Garden and whether or not he'll have a good game there or not. So I think it'd be more important for them to find rest, and I think that's liable to happen also.
So do you think that so when LeBron rested against the Cavaliers or against the Heat, that was the game Miami won 120-92 March 4th. Right. And then he played in the next one, but he didn't play that. Well, he played 39 minutes, and he scored 30 points, but the Heat won
Miami
that game, too.
Won. Yeah.
So, do you think there's something to LeBron resting against the Heat? Like, we can't act like there's not still, like, a... There's got to... For LeBron to play the Heat, that's got to be different than LeBron playing Atlanta. Like, he played for Miami for 4 years, and, of course, like, he's always said, Cleveland has always been my home, blah, 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 blah. But he had a good 4 years in Miami. Do you think it's still, like, weird for him to play the Heat? Do you think that there's a reason maybe that he will sit out against the Heat, or why he's kind of struggled against Miami since leaving?
I don't think so. Not in a regular season game at this point, late in the season, not. I think if Miami makes it to the playoffs and they wind up facing Cleveland somehow in the first round, I think going in there and standing in that floor and seeing a ton of white shirts everywhere, I think that'll kind of bring back memories. I think it'll be impossible for a guy like LeBron to just separate that visual effect, you know, because he played so often with that taking place, and he reveled in it when it was happening here in Miami. So I think that would different. I think that would be a little bit different than just playing a regular season game. In a regular season game, you can kind of detach a little bit. You hear the same noise all the time, LeChoke, LeBum, whatever. You know, people yelling at him. If he sits it out, look, if he sits out the game, people are going to be calling him, you know, all sorts of disgusting names. attacking his manhood because he's not man enough to play a game, et cetera. It's ridiculous. And I think he'll just realize that it's a road game and it's not that big a deal. But I think when the playoffs come around and to stand there at that floor and look around and see the thousands and thousands of white shirts and people screaming.
The white hot heat thing. Yeah, that might get to him.
Yeah, I think so.
Just interesting thing to think about. Well, hopefully we see it, right? Because I think at this point, with Cleveland beating the Celtics, they've got a really nice – they've got the inside track on the one seed. The Heat, by beating the Hornets, they have the tiebreaker against the Pacers. I think they've got the inside track for the eighth seed. We'll see if they could pull it off. The next four games are against three playoff teams. They play the Wizards twice. Three playoff teams. That's going to be tough for them. But hopefully, you know, Cleveland is resting. And they're able to get an easy win, a gimme win there. So we'll see. We'll hope it happens. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the Wizards now. They've got nothing left to fight for, right? I mean, the third seed. I mean, does it matter for them whether they face either one? Well, I guess they want to avoid Milwaukee in the first round, right? Wouldn't they?
Yeah. And I think with the third seed, you get home court if something happens to one of the top two seeds. So, you know, there's that. But anyway, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks to everybody who sent mailbag questions in the middle of the week. We always appreciate it because we usually do these for Monday. But if we get enough of them in the middle of the week, we'll break open the mailbag in the middle of the week. And with that, make sure that you're subscribed. If you're not, you should definitely do so. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.